This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show.
Maramanov set inside of the net. Backlund across for Pospisil. Robbed by Dimco with the right pad. A tremendous lateral save from the Canuck netminder. He's back, baby. Audrey poke check by Suter. Gets it ahead to Miller. He's got a chance. Left wing shoots. He scores! Off the post and in from JT Miller. He scores his 37th of the season, and it's 4-1 Vancouver.
With instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Pass to the back door. Miller can't settle it. It rolls into the corner, but that is going to do it. For the third time in their history, the Vancouver Canucks have won 50 games in a single season. And they win their division for the 11th time. The first time they've ever won the Pacific Division. They ice it tonight on home ice with a big 4-1 win over their rivals from Alberta, the Calgary Flames.
Have your say on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks clinched the Pacific Division, 50 wins on the campaign, 109 points. What a season for your Vancouver Canucks, beating the Calgary Flames tonight 4-1 to close out their home schedule. Only one more game remaining in the National Hockey League regular season for your Canucks. That's coming up on Thursday against the Winnipeg Jets. And the Canucks don't need to do anything in that game unless they want to finish first in the Western Conference. But that depends on what the Dallas Stars do tomorrow. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by the number 5 Orange on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah with Dan Riccio. Going to bring in Randeep Janda into the conversation in just a moment. As always, you can grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650, and get your thoughts in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. On a night that the Canucks clinch the division and also mark the return of Thatcher Demko between the pipes, who was sensational tonight, making 39 saves, stopping 39 out of 40 shots in the 4-1 win. And Randeep, I mean, what else can you ask for when it comes to getting the best out of your goaltender who's playing his first game in weeks tonight?
Yeah, he was locked in. He made a couple of high-degree saves, too. That one on Pospisil when he lost his stick but ends up making the blocker save. There's one on Kadri. There's a couple in the third period. Through 40 minutes, there weren't that many opportunities, grade A's, but when they came, he was ready for it. So I think Thatcher Demko, you know, in those moments, even if he would have let one of those goals in, you'd excuse him for it, right? He's been away for 5 weeks. There's some rust, but he didn't allow that moment. And the one puck that ended up beating him, guys, it was off Nikita Zadorov.
Yeah.
So anything he saw, he was saving tonight.
It was really impressive. I think it was the perfect game for Thatcher Demko to come back. You mentioned the amount of saves he had to make, 39 out of 40 saves, and he makes all of them. Only has a couple of, like, really five alarm saves that he has to make. I mean, yeah, the Canucks got a little bit looser than you would have liked them to in the third period, but even still, most of what Calgary generated was perimeter-based, Randy. The Canucks, for the most part tonight, stuck to their staples, and they allowed Calgary all the volume in the world, but not a lot of real quality chances.
Through 40 minutes, and definitely in the second period when the Canucks ramped it up, you could see one team was a playoff team, the other was not. You could see that quite clearly. It's a great feeling to have when you're covering the playoff team. I turned to Batch and said, we've seen this a few years, but it's been a while since we could say that Vancouver Canucks were the team that was dominating play. And Thatcher Demko benefited from that, but he also had to make two or three saves that were, you know, maybe a little bit, this was a diving, you know, in the Olympics. We'd say, okay, that was a high degree of difficulty. A couple of those, but he was pretty standard. And I think that's a credit to the team. Calgary played it more aggressive in the third period, which you're going to do. You're down. They're pretty aggressive with their defensemen to begin with, but I thought it was a strong effort, especially for the goaltender, because that's what we're watching today. Say, is there any rust on him? Is there any reason to be worried? JT Miller mentioned this morning, he's played with Henrik Lundqvist, he's played with Andre Vasilevsky, and in his mind, Thatcher Demko is that same mindset, that same type of player, and he showed he was locked in tonight.
Well, the Canucks, 5-on-5, had 17 high-danger scoring chances. They allowed 5.
Yeah.
So for all the volume Calgary had tonight, not a ton of quality, but to the point you made, there was a couple of sequences we had to go post to post. The best one I thought he made was late in the second period on Pospisil, goals across.
The backline pass, yeah.
Yeah, makes a great save, and it shows, okay, he's ready to play. You know, he's not any worse for wear in terms of his movement. He looks very solid.
There was the Kadri chance on the power play.
Yeah, that was a good chance as well. And obviously the Pospisil shot, he's coming downhill, and he ends up scoring. But not a ton of high degree of difficulty situations he was put in, which is kind of the perfect night.
Yeah.
One thing I didn't want to see tonight was him having to go post to post a dozen times, really put a stress on that knee. And he got a lot of volume. I don't think you could craft a better game for him to see a lot of the puck, but also not putting him in bad situations for his health.
Yeah, we talked about this pregame, where it's like you want him to see the puck. You want him to get some work, but at the same time, you want to ease him in. I thought that performance was exactly what you're looking for. A couple of saves where, yeah, he's got to turn it up. But for Thatcher Demko, you know, this is a guy that is so competitive. His mindset, going back to really his rookie season, was something that a lot of folks talked about, to say this guy is wired a certain way. Even in the lead-up to this game, he was talking about how he was pushing the staff and getting them to you know, kind of pushing the program a little bit more to make sure that he could get in these games. And that effort right there, two or three times he had to make the high, you know, the high degree of difficulty saves. This is a guy that when he's, you know, he's willing to push not only himself, but that type of effort pushes everybody on that team to say, if this guy's been out for 5 weeks and he's at that level, we can ramp it up too.
And there's like moments of tonight's game where you see like Sharon Govich had a chance in the second where he tries to like sneak one in short side.
Yep.
But there's no holes, you know, like he had his net. He was very comfortable. He didn't seem like there was no signs of rust from Thatcher Demko, even after being off for more than a month. And communication with the defense, which has been such a big key all season long. There was one shot from Huberdeau in the first period where it's clear the defenders stay off Huberdeau and just say, all right, like, this is how we play. You take the shot. We make sure that there's no, like, you don't have to go post to post here. If he beats you one-on-one, great. Good for Jonathan Huberdeau, but we're going to let Thatcher Demko take that shot and make defending a little bit easier, take away that cross-ice pass.
Well, the key word here is, guys, even going back the last couple of years, but especially this year because we're seeing it work, it's the word trust.
Yeah.
Where we trust the goaltender to make the save, and, you know, he trusts his guys to make the right decision, and that's something that we saw numerous times, and I'm glad you brought up that play, but there was that Connor Zary tip as well, like an elbow save, a right elbow save. That one had some danger on it too, but that's one where he's just positioned so well and just kind of doesn't have to do much. But the reaction, you know, when you're coming back from an injury, especially as a goaltender, after 5 weeks, the reaction time was flawless.
Even
early on in the game, he made one save. It didn't seem like it was much, but the reaction speed off the faceoff win for Calgary, boom, a shot goes on, and he was on it. So I think from that perspective, there's the trust element, but there's also this guy didn't have any rest on him.
Well, the other thing, you know, when we talk about trust and communication with your defenseman, you look at the Joshua goal, and it's a two-on-one. Lindholm goes to the net, spreads out for the pass. The defender takes it away pretty well, but Markstrom creeps into his net a little bit too much and gives Joshua too much net to shoot at. That's a communication where Markstrom's got to know, I can take the shooter, and you're going to take away the pass.
Be aggressive.
I can play that, but they don't, they're not on the same page entirely, so it opens up a little bit more of the net than Jacob Markstrom would normally give in that kind of a situation.
Yeah, I'm with you on that too. And I think one of the things the Canucks did well tonight was, I mean, I thought actually up until the second period, about midway through late in the second, the Canucks were in full control. And they were pretty much for most of the game too, like we mentioned. The third got a lot looser, like, you know,
put off the gas a little
like
bit.
Reach alluded to.
Yep.
But I thought in the first period, it was really tight hockey. They weren't giving Calgary much of anything, and it kind of suffocated the life out of them. They didn't have much push.
Well, they played Canucks hockey to a T.
They did. And it was like, hey, we have a good 20 minutes. We got the lead, and we can kind of cruise the rest of the way. That's kind of what it felt like this game.
Part of it was that, and part of it was also they took advantage of the mistakes that Calgary made, right?
That's Canucks hockey.
Yeah.
Is it not?
Totally. In the neutral zone where you're supposed to play an aggressive style of play, if you're given that much room to operate, like that Tyler Myers goal, even though it's a man down, right, the amount of time that Teddy Bluger has to make a decision there, he's probably thinking early on to say, all right, I'm going to get it deep. Wait a second, I got a guy on the right-hand side. I can make that play.
Well, give Myers a lot of credit on that play because you can see Soucy say to Bluger, just get it deep, and then Myers is just beelining it up the ice and forces Bluger to hit him. If Myers isn't pushing forward like that, he's not getting that opportunity.
And that's one thing about Tyler's game. You know, he's got, what, four shorthanded goals in his Canucks career, which is only behind Matias Olin and Jyrki Lumek. He's prone to do that. When he finds that open space along the right-hand side, he's going to take it, and he's done it a few times in his Canucks career. But that was a great recognition of Bluger as well, just to say, oh, wait a second, I got a guy that's going down the runway. I got a big, you know, Airbus 350, A350 going down there. I got to hit in stride, right?
It's kind of hard for Tyler Myers to get lost in the ice. But
Calgary found a way to lose him, though.
Calgary found a way to lose him. You're so right about the Canucks waiting for the other team to make mistakes. And that's what I mean by Canucks hockey, right? You all season long, especially through the early part of the season, we saw them build leads quick and then be able to play on those leads, get into their structure, and wait for other teams to make mistakes, and then increase their lead when their opposition made those mistakes. That was essentially what happened most of the night. That's where the Joshua goal comes in the second period. You know, you're going to try and pinch, you're going to try and make a play, we're going to crush you for it. And that's what the Canucks have made their hay on all season long, and they showed it here tonight. You know, they knew Calgary was going to play the way that they do. They knew Calgary is like Philip Hronek said, 2 days away from holiday. And they're trying
of all the guys that you would make that trip to, Philip Hronek was not on that. I was not making that pick tonight.
But I mean, Philip Hronek is making the playoffs for the first time.
He's happy.
As an NHL player.
He's happy.
So he knows what it feels like being 2 days away from golfing at the end of a regular
season. He's like, boys, I didn't book any flights. You did.
Yes.
If I'm Patrick Alvin, I'm calling Philip Hronek about, hey, you want to be 2 days away from holiday next year? Like, let's get a contract done. Okay, all kidding aside. The part of it, though, is it's what the Canucks used to be, that they flipped the script on. Where they're the team trying to make a play, trying to force something that isn't there, throwing an extra guy into the rush, finding three guys below the puck in the offensive zone. All of a sudden, it's a 3-on-2, 2-on-1 going back the other way. Turnovers at the offensive blue line. Like, all of those mistakes, big, huge mistakes that the Canucks would make on a regular basis in the past, that's what Calgary is now, and that's the team that Vancouver can take advantage of every single night.
And that's my point about the playoff team versus non-playoff team, right? We've seen this before, but on the other side, the flip side, on that 3-0 goal, you talked about that Shillington going on that pinch, even the 2-0 goal, it's just so much room for the Vancouver Canucks to operate.
There's, like, the Hoglander goal, you know, Rick Tocchet says it all the time. There's only so many times you're going to be able to pull off the big tic-tac-toe play in a game. And tonight was that kind of a night where – you know, they move the puck up. It's like zero pressure on the breakout, right? Pettersson's able to easily break that puck out of his own end.
Mikheyev's got all the time in the world.
And then through the no pressure through the neutral zone. And they complete two cross-ice passes then in the offensive zone. You know, yes, it's a good play. Yes, you're taking what they're giving you, but you know, that's the kind of time and space you will not be afforded next week.
For sure. And you had a team on that 4-1 goal in Calgary, Nazem Kadri, who's really been, you know, a bright spot for this team, third star of the week, trying to force the issue, right? We've seen that in Vancouver as well in previous years where he's saying, I got to do this by myself. We're down 3-1. I got to find that moment. What happens? Suter with an active stick, boom, going the other way. And what I liked about that play, guys, was up until that point, the Canucks were kind of sitting back. They're skating backwards. On that goal, Suter with JT Miller combined to really be aggressive in that part of the ice to say, all right, you're the last man back. You're going to pull a move on this. We're going to strip you of the puck, and JT Miller's going the other way. So a lot of good from this. Of course, the Calgary Flames are the Calgary Flames, but you have to build those good habits. You have to make sure you're in a situation where you're, you know, you're doing things right, and that's what they did. And, you know, I think the biggest takeaway for me for this game is Thatcher Demko, but also going back to Canucks hockey, as you mentioned, take advantage of the team's mistakes. And that offense that we've talked about sometimes, is it there? Can it be there consistently enough? If you play like that, if you're that aggressive in the neutral zone, you play with some speed, head up, you're going to get those goals.
Yeah, and they showed some of that tonight. And I think even they had 31 shots on the scoreboard at least. But for a lot of the game, when they controlled the puck in the offensive zone, there's a lot of moments where the Canucks could look for volume. And again, this is what Canucks hockey has developed into. They could look for volume, but they're looking for the tip in the high slot.
Yeah.
Pettersson looking for the backdoor pass, that great play that he made in the second period, eyes in the back of his head, sees Zadorov creeping off the backside and almost finds him and connects him for a big, like, guaranteed goal if they connect on that play. But they got to a point where it's very obvious they're looking for the better play rather than just taking the available shot sometimes, which is what they did so much of early in the season that led to a lot of success.
And wasn't the perfect example of that the Hoglander goal?
Yeah.
I mean, just tic-tac-toe walking into the net, essentially. It's very much a soccer goal. I mean, you make that last pass, and it just goes into
an empty side net. Foot into the back of the net, right?
And you know what? That line, and we're seeing people text in, Josh in Calgary, saying, I don't want to hear any criticism about Ilya Mikheyev tonight. The goal doesn't happen if Ilya Mikheyev doesn't make a great play. He says, I know Mikheyev hasn't been a top six caliber player a while, but if he's going to play like he has the last couple weeks, then I can live with it. And there was somebody else texting in about Mikheyev and saying, I don't want to hear any criticism about Ilya Mikheyev with how he played. That's bungalow gym. The second goal doesn't happen without that beautiful pass that he made.
He had numerous quality plays tonight.
He did.
He also had a couple of chances early on. Remember on the backhand?
He had two on that chance,
after on the forehand.
Didn't have a ton of space to make a move there, but still gets himself into a good spot.
He doesn't skate through the play. What I like is, at some point, if you play that way, you stop in the blue paint or right in front of the blue paint, you start looking for that rebound. Credit to Markstrom. He sealed off the bottom of the net, didn't allow it. A lot of goalies aren't going to be able to do that. And the fact that Mikheyev did not just skate through this crease, he's going to get one of them.
Yeah.
I don't like the do factor. That's not a great play. You guys are making
do is part of your brand.
No, right? Not anymore. I might have lost some money after that, so I decided to change my brand on that.
They're do.
You guys are making money. I got to give you props on that.
Before we let you go here, Randeep, I wanted to ask about the Lindholm Garland Joshua line. I thought they were a pain in the butt to play against tonight. There was that great scrum, too. Garland, I know it was a bit of a mixed shift there. Garland was on with Hoglander, and he jumped in. But I thought Lindholm, Garland, and Joshua built on the chemistry they showed the other game. I mean, who hasn't had chemistry playing down the middle with Garland and Joshua? But that's very promising, seeing Lindholm get a point tonight, but also be really effective, create chances. That line really looks dangerous.
Yeah, it does, and it has the identity of a playoff line, which is a little bit of heaviness, too, with Dakota Joshua. You've got a player that is so good at puck retrievals with Connor Garland. You've got an individual in, Elias Lindholm's just good at everything, right? Sure, he might not shoot out the lights, he might not pick up the points, but when he's that defensively responsible and he gets the opportunity, he can make plays. I love that line right now for the Canucks, but they do have an option where if things get stale at some point or you have to deal with something, you got Teddy Bluger there as well, and you got some options. With Joshua, though, he scores another goal, but guys, the way that he's being able to physically impose himself on games. Today, he played physical, but it wasn't the most physical game. But we know he's got it in him, right?
Yeah.
Against the opposition, against the right opposition, he can throw 8 hits, which he's done 3 times this year. He can be even more of a menace on the forecheck. So I thought this was another solid game. I think this is going to be a real difference-making line for the Canucks because they can be that matchup line. And territorially, they can dominate at times. So, we'll see what happens in terms of who they play. Of course, there's a lot of discussion about Nashville, and I guess the odds are now above 80% or whatever it is. But that's a pain in the rear end to play against that line.
Yeah. Joshua's also become he's got a goal scorer mindset a little bit. You see it on the goal that he scores, right? When he gets shooting opportunities, he's not passing them up too often. And I kind of like that about him. He's got a better shot than we gave him credit for. He certainly is showing it off a little bit more this year. But he's got a shooter's mindset in the sense that when he gets into good spots, he's not shy about taking a shot.
He feels like he's more confident coming back from the injury. Early on, don't get me wrong, he had, more than 10 goals. He was 11, 12 goals when he got injured. But now when he's got that opportunity reach, there's not a hesitation from him. Yeah. Where I felt maybe early on in the year, there were still moments of he's got, getting 4 or 5 chances. He's not being able to convert on them. But now it's automatic. It's instinct for him, which is a great thing to have because that tells you this is a guy that when he came to Vancouver, we often thought, oh, he's a physical presence. He's a big guy. He can maybe he can be a bottom line four. No, he's shown that he can score, 17 goals on the season. And the fact that he's thinking shot first, that's a potential game changer.
Absolutely. Randeep, fantastic stuff, calling the game alongside Brendan Batchelor. One more regular season game to go, and then finally the postseason will be here. And that may be as soon as Sunday, hopefully Monday. we'll find out soon enough. There's been more controversy around when the Canucks will play their first playoff game than anything else going on with the team right now.
Yeah, this is a very exciting time, and guys, I'm gonna have to plug something here.
What do you got?
Keep an eye on Dudsorda tomorrow. There might be a hockey fan related thing coming out tomorrow. So that's my plug. All right, that's my tease.
Businessman, always a businessman. Great stuff. That is Randeep Janda. Keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox 650-650. You can also grab a phone line 604-280-0650 or toll free 1-888-275-0650. One thing I would say, and I'm seeing a lot of people saying, well, winning the division isn't that big of a deal. And I'm not sure, you know, in terms of playoffs, what it matters. I mean, you can't take what happens in the regular season and apply it to the postseason. But the regular season is an 82-game marathon.
Yes.
And winning a division that includes the Edmonton Oilers and the Vegas Golden Knights, who just won the Stanley Cup, is no small feat.
Yep.
And listen, you can have whatever opinion you want on it, but I think it's very impressive that the Canucks are finishing this campaign winning the Pacific Division. You can enjoy it and then park it for the playoffs. Obviously, it doesn't mean anything when it comes, but I don't think we should gloss over that this team, in a division that includes the Oilers and Golden Knights, that 99% of 100% of prognosticators had winning the division. It was either going to be Edmonton, it was either going to be Vegas. And the Canucks just won it with 109 points on the campaign. They may finish the season with 111 points. It's a tremendous regular season in one of the toughest divisions in the National Hockey League.
I despise the notion that championship or bust. I get it. There is one ultimate goal, and that is to win the Stanley Cup. Nobody is disagreeing with that mindset, with that notion. But what I will say is you should take more joy in the process that it takes to get there. Whether it is getting to a President's Trophy, a division title, all of those things are a remarkable achievement and should be applauded. Should be, hey, I'm not doing the whole, like, you know, baseball popping bottles in the dressing room after a division title or clinching a wild card berth into the playoffs. I'm not going there. But I am saying you should enjoy, you should be proud, you should, as a fan, gloat that your team was the Pacific Division winner over teams like Edmonton and the Vegas Golden Knights, because it shows that you were the most consistent team during the regular season, during the marathon. It is incredibly difficult to have the kind of success, to have the sustained success that the Canucks have had over the 82 games this year. And yeah, it may not result in a championship, but that doesn't take away from the building blocks they put together in a year where, I mean, we just haven't seen this kind of consistency out of the Canucks in a very long time. Sure, you could even go back to the first year of Willie D. But as much as we know about hockey now, we know there was a lot of smoke and mirrors that year. Even still, to manage that over a full 82 should be somewhat applauded. And I think they've accomplished a big thing tonight, especially after being a team that nobody and a lot of people didn't even see making the playoffs this year.
Absolutely. It's a great accomplishment by the Vancouver Canucks. The postseason can't get here soon enough. But at the very least, it's been a fantastic regular season for the Canucks. Keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. This one here from Chris and Duncan. Could have been worse, guys. We could have won the President's Trophy. No, the President's Trophy curse, as some would put it. That's not happening.
What if the Rangers win the title?
Yeah, well, we'll see. This one here says, agree with you guys. This year has been so much fun. So much has been accomplished. Absolutely. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. Before we get to the phone boards, one thing I want to clarify for those wondering, the Canucks can still win the Western Conference, top spot in the Western Conference. What would have to happen is the Dallas Stars would have to lose in regulation tomorrow against the St. Louis Blues. And if they do and the Canucks win against the Jets on Thursday, they would win the Western Conference.
Yeah.
Because the Canucks would have the tiebreaker in regulation wins against the Dallas Stars. So they can still, if they tie Dallas in points, they could still win the Western Conference. So it hasn't yet been determined whether they're playing Nashville or Vegas or L.A. If they finish first in the Western Conference, they're playing L.A. or Nashville.
Yeah.
I mean, L.A. or Vegas. Nashville's been decided as a wild card one team. Whoever finishes second is going to play them. So unless the Dallas Stars take care of business or get a point, we may not find out where the Canucks finish and whom they play until Thursday.
The probabilities are that Vegas will win their final game, which is against the Anaheim Ducks, and finish above the LA Kings. That's at least where the probabilities are. So second wild card right now, for probability's sake, will land on the LA Kings. So, again, you know, we've discussed and debated this so much. Can you lose? Whatever. I mean, you're not throwing any games. That's a ridiculous notion in the first place. Canucks are taking care of their own business and seeing where the chips fall as they fall. And that's the best way to go about it.
Absolutely. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. C-Legs texted in, and he was saying, what a great season, guys. I've always loved the Canucks. They should be so proud of themselves and how hard they've worked. I am. That's C-Legs texting in. Let's take a phone call here. Let's go to the phone board, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. Let's go to Campbell River, where we have Daniel on the line. Daniel, thanks for calling in, pal. What are your thoughts after the Canucks clinched the division? Winning 4-1 tonight over the Flames.
I honestly have so many thoughts, but I don't want to be one of those guys that talks for so long you have to hang up the phone.
Give us your strongest take. Let's hear it.
I said at the beginning of the year, whether you guys remember or not, I feel like I made a point to say to every single talking head on the radio at 650 that if they hit 50 wins, I will believe again. And they did it, and that's an incredible feat. Now they just, like, how incredible is it that this year we're talking about, should they throw the last game to try and pick their opponent because they have that power, or it's a death march? You know, like, it's unbelievable, and I can finally allow myself to truly believe again, because they did it. They hit 50 wins. Thanks, boys. Keep it up. This year is better than the last ones, right?
Exactly. Hey, Daniel, thanks for the phone call. Appreciate Daniel. He listens and texts in all the time, so we always have time
Love
for
that.
Daniel. And a good phone call calling in as well. I mean, I know a lot of fans. I know he wasn't saying the Canucks should try to lose. I see a lot of fans saying, hey, maybe they should do everything they can to avoid playing Vegas or L.A. To me, if you try to line up who you play, you're begging for something to go wrong. Like, yeah. I think it also shows, and I don't think the players would do this, I think it shows a wrong mentality too. I think it shows a weak mentality that you're afraid of certain opponents. And then it shows that, are you actually ready to play a lower opponent? If you're wishing to play X team instead of Y,
yeah.
Are you prepared to even play X
yeah.
team? Then you might think it's too easy against you. I mean, hey, last year, Toronto fans won at Florida.
Yeah.
How did that work out? So it's like you got to be careful what you ask for.
And generally, this is a fan notion, and it is something us talking heads will discuss as fans want to talk about it. Who's the best opponent? Who do they match up most best against? All of those things are very obvious topics. There is nothing out of the Canucks, out of the players, out of the way the coach speaks that suggests they have any sort of that kind of mindset. Every single time they've been asked, oh, is this a measuring stick game? Oh, what do you think about these guys? How do you play against them? Their answer is genuinely always the same. Go back and listen to the tape. Listen to when Rick Tocchet, JT Miller, Quinn Hughes, or any of these guys are asked about the upcoming opponent. What do they say? If we focus on ourselves, we'll be in good shape. If we focus on what we need to do, we'll have success. All of those things have been talked about all season long. And so when it comes to, do they face Nashville? Do they face Vegas? Do they face the LA Kings? It's the same mindset for the Vancouver Canucks every single time, at least from what we hear out of that room. As long as we play the way we should play, the way that we play Canucks hockey, we think we'll have success. And I think it goes the same for who their potential playoff matchup will be. I don't think in that room they care all that much. As far as what other teams might think, I think other teams might think Vancouver is the opponent they'd rather have over the Edmonton Oilers or whatever else. But reality's sake, Vancouver's not thinking that way.
I hope they're not. And we'll see ultimately what happens. It may not even be in their hands, in their control, depending on what Dallas does tomorrow against the St. Louis Blues. Keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650. We'll get to more of your reaction, and we'll hear from the Canucks head coach, Rick Tocchet, That's coming up next after a 4-1 Canucks win in the final regular season home game over the Calgary Flames. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by the number 5 Orange, a Vancouver legend. They've got sports too. More next on Home Your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Dan Riccio.
And Satyar Shah.
Join us for Canucks Central, where we will set up the game and break down the latest around the Canucks.
4 to 6 p.m. and postgame on Sportsnet 650 and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Myers snuck up the right wing side. None of the Flames picked him up. And Bluger fed a perfect pass to him that sprung him in. And Myers rips it past his former teammate to give the Canucks the lead. Now here's Pettersson, left wing to the goal center. In front, they score! Nils Höglander! A pretty passing play in the offensive zone, and the Canucks extend the lead to 2-0. It's Nils Höglander's 24th of the season.
And that was just a smooth operation by the Vancouver Canucks. Started off by Elias Pettersson at his defensive blue line. Gets the puck to the right-hand side to Ilya Mikheyev. Gets it back in the middle of the ice. And then sets up Höglander for his 24th goal of the season. An easy one at that. But that started by Elias Pettersson and finished off by Höglander, who's got 24 even-strength goals as well.
What a goal by Nils Höglander. Incredible passing play from Ilya Mikheyev and Elias Pettersson. It all started from the breakout out of their own zone. Great play through the neutral zone. And then a terrific feed from Mikheyev to Pettersson. And then Pettersson finding Nils Höglander, walking the puck into the goal. Doesn't get much prettier than that. Tic-tac-toe, 2-0, ends up being the game-winning goal. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by the number 5 Orange on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah with Dan Riccio. Keep getting your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. We are going to get to the Canucks head coach coming up in just a couple of moments, but a lot's popping on our text inbox, 650-650. And, you know, obviously, there was a lot of love for Thatcher Demko with how he played, but also one guy getting some love is JT Miller. Nuck in the six says Miller and the wrister off the left foot off his left foot is shades of Messier in his prime. Not intended to trigger fans. That is Nuck in the six texting in. And JT Miller, another goal tonight, and he did look like a man on a mission on a few shifts. Now I wouldn't say he was dominant start to finish, but he mentioned he wanted more out of himself before the playoffs began, and I think he kind of took that to heart and definitely in parts of this game here against Calgary tonight.
37 goals on the season, 103 points. I mean, the guy's been unreal for so much of this year, and there's another gear there. He admitted it today when he spoke, and we talked about this on Canuck Central in the opening segment. There is another gear for JT Miller to get to. We've seen it at different points. Yeah. I think, you know, that period during, you know, shortly after the All-Star break when the Canucks were scuffling a little bit and it seemed as though, Pettersson wasn't going and even Hughes was slowing down a little bit and Miller was trying to drag the team along all by his lonesome. But he's had some big moments all season long. He's the most exciting player, as they announced tonight. And that goal, you know, the one-footed wrister is – like, it's JT Miller's thing now.
Yeah.
You know, it's a threat on the power play. It's a threat when he's able to get it on a breakaway. He is just absolutely lethal with it. One of the best shots in the league when he's in that kind of a spot. And it was a great goal to seal the win tonight.
Yeah, it absolutely was. And the Vancouver Canucks, 4-1 victors, JT Miller getting on the board. And we'll break down some of the goals as the show goes on here for your Canucks tonight. But let's get to the thoughts of the Canucks head coach. We'll get more of your text messages and phone calls as the show goes on. But here is the Canucks bench boss, Rick Tocchet, postgame after the final regular season home game and also clinching the Pacific Division. Here are his thoughts afterwards.
Thought he played great.
Come out of it unscathed.
I think we gave him, I think that was the plan, let him get a lot of work tonight.
For a game that didn't mean much.
I was joking. Like, nobody's laughing at that one? I thought that was pretty funny. We gave him a lot of.
It seems serious.
Well, I know. I was waiting for somebody to crack a smile.
For a game that didn't mean much in the standings, they played with a lot of feistiness tonight. Yeah. One of the things I guess you got to be happy with was the, quote, Wolfpack mentality your team had tonight.
Yeah, I mean, you have to have that, you know, regular season, playoffs, you know, all that stuff. Yeah, you definitely love that stuff.
Similar to the Edmonton game a little bit where you guys locked down the lead. What did you think of your team's ability to do that tonight?
Yeah, I honestly, I'm just happy we won the Pacific Division. I mean, the guys did a hell of a job all year. I mean, obviously, let's face it, nobody really picked us to win the division. So you got to give the players a lot of credit. The game wasn't a Picasso, obviously, but you got to take the positive. You know, we won the Pacific tonight, so I'm really happy for the guys. Like, it's a big honor, and the guys should enjoy it.
Sometimes you get into these games against teams you should beat, and you kind of let them hang around. The Myers goal early, what did that do for the group?
Yeah, it was big. That was a nice shot. Mizey jumping up the play. It was a big one. You know, it got us energized. You know, that tic-tac-toe. The other one, the PD's line, was nice. And then we kind of, you know, I think we were just waiting for the clock to go, and we stopped playing a little bit. But, you know, winning 4-1, locking it down. And, you know, obviously Denver. I thought Denver was excellent tonight.
The Pacific Division obviously means a lot to the group, but you might be in a position to win the Western Conference. So, you know, you've got some decisions to make. You knew it was going to change after tonight. So what's your mindset going forward?
Yeah. You know, talk to the group, talk to the trainers, see who's banged up. There's a lot of factors involved, and, you know, we can't make them in 5 minutes, but we're going to have to do some research and figure the best way to handle this. But, yeah, you know, you always want to win every game, but you also there's precautionary things too.
You talked about the pride in winning the Pacific Division.
Yeah.
What about 50 wins on the year? It's only something that has now been accomplished 3 times in franchise history.
Yeah, I mean, it's a hell of a feat going into training camp, you know, working every day for this. You know, it's a resilient group, you know, bouncing back after some, whether tough play losses or whatever. We had some good winning streaks. So, you know, we had to win the game tonight, which we did. So you got to give the guys credit.
Talked to you before the game about the depth that you have now with the lines currently configured. Did you like the way that, you know, all 4 lines performed in that regard tonight in terms of the shifts they gave you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's hard to evaluate this game. I didn't think we played our best, but winning the game is the most important. And, you know, we'll get to the lines and figure it out. But, yeah, I do like the depth part, yes.
Is there still more experimenting, more things you want, more combinations that you want to see from your lineup over the next practices and whatnot heading into the playoffs here?
Yeah, probably not. I mean, maybe a tweak here and there, but this is where we're going with. You know, we've had enough times of experimenting and trying to figure a few things out, but I think this is where we're going to go with. Maybe there might be a switch here and there, don't get me wrong, but so far, you know, I think we're going to stick with this way.
And you've touched on winning the Pacific Division,
yeah.
50 wins. At the very beginning of this season, Jim Rutherford said everything had to go right in order for this team to make the playoffs. How are you feeling personally at this point?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a long year, regular season, and, you know, the group is bought in, and it's just been a, you know, it's an everyday type of team. We try to do the right things every day and then correct it. How am I feeling? I mean, obviously, you're happy when the Pacific Division, but this is a whole ball, you know, was it next Monday or two, wherever we play, is a whole different ball, you know, ball game. So you're always confident in your group. So I'm excited about us opening night here. We got, you know, 2, 3, 4 days to prepare for it. So is it 4 or 5 days? Yeah, to prepare for it. So we'll get to the drawing board and figure out what we're going to drop.
Rick, it looked like the forecheck did a great job kind of stopping them at their own blue line. What did you think was working so well with the forecheck today for your guys?
Well, we wanted to be above, and I thought for the most part being above them, because, you know, they're a pretty good transition team. You know, I give them credit. They played hard. You know, they only got a game left. But staying above is usually the best way and try to hold the blue line. And then, like I said, after that, you know, Denver was excellent.
We know it's a day-by-day mentality here for you guys and everything, but some emotional game there, and it felt like the guys kind of came together as a team. What was the feeling in the locker room after a game like that?
Well, I think they're still out there doing the jersey, so I haven't really had a chance to talk to them. But, that's the one thing with this group. You know, I mean, I'm sure they're excited, but I don't think they're sky high. I think they're ready for the next part of this journey. You know, you got to enjoy it. I mean, Pacific, you know, to win this, there's good teams in our division. It's a tough division. So You got to give these guys a lot of credit.
You said, Rick, when you came and took this job, that the crest should mean something. What does it mean to you on a night like this, and how far this season has the team come in building the culture identity that you want?
Well, I think it's a step forward. You know, the crest means a lot to me, and you know, we always talk about the emblem on the front more than the back, and I think a lot of guys have bought into that. You know, we try not to preach individualism around here. It's good. You know, it's good for guys to get accolades and 100 points, some guys 40 goal. That's all great. Don't get me wrong, but it's all about the crest, and that's what wins in the playoffs. And I think it's so that's what I'm most proud of the guys really buying into this year. And then you got young guys that we've drafted. And then you got the young guys like Hoaglander and stuff. You know, they're feeding off this, you know, the culture, the crest, and it just permeates, you know, as a each level, you know. So that's the way I think you build organizations.
We'll go to Kuz here, and then we'll open the room, guys.
Rick, you talked this morning a little bit about Hoaglander. He was in the middle of everything there, scored a nice goal, but gets involved in a scrum, gets involved late. Does he have to temper his approach for the postseason in that respect, thinking of how any penalty can be a big one?
It's a tough one because, you know, he's an energizer type of guy, right? So you got to be careful. I don't want to take his batteries out, right? But, you know, you have to be careful too, right? You can't be, you know, taking an undisciplined penalty. So it's, you know, I've lived that, you know, in my career. You got to be able to play on the edge, which he's good at, but also not draw, you know, go to the line. So, yeah, I didn't think he did anything bad tonight. I thought he was just scored a big goal and he was kind of in their kitchen a little bit. I don't think he was over the edge at all. I thought he was just involved in some feisty plays. I like that tonight. I don't think he did anything wrong tonight. Played good.
That is the Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet after a 4-1 victory. And as you would imagine, he's not
surprised at all.
He loves the rough stuff, doesn't he? He's like, oh, that's fine.
Good on Hoaglander for getting a little emotion into the game.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, I don't want anybody to get hurt or anything like that. But, you know, I don't take his batteries out. You want to keep the batteries in. Go out there and do your thing. But he loves it.
The whole situation was hilarious. The way Brett Festerling, one of an analyst during the intermissions, put it. You know, Braden Paschal was just thinking this was a no-hitter.
Yeah. It's like, wait, what's going on?
What is somebody – just somebody just hit me?
This is not a preseason game?
How dare you?
I mean, Paschal, I mean, hey, for a guy who hasn't been in the NHL very long, very entitled to that game check, hey? You got to play a lot harder than that, man. Come on.
He was like, what is this forecheck?
What's forecheck?
What is happening here?
Acting like a 10-year NHL vet who got hit too hard in the preseason. It's game 81. Relax. Or maybe don't relax so much. Yeah. Play a bit tougher. That is the Canucks head coach at the podium, brought to you by Tile Town. From vision to reality, Tile Town has everything you need for your tiling project. See them today in Victoria, Richmond, Langley, and online at mytiletown.ca. And, you know, the head coach had a lot of praise for his team. And the one thing, and it's kind of funny, kind of comes full circle. He spoke so much before the season about the crest and playing for the crest and everyone buying into not individualism, buying into the greater good and sacrificing for one another. But as we've discussed, and I know a lot of former players will talk about this too, when something really amazing happens when everyone sacrifices, because then everybody can eat at the same time. Because if you sacrifice for your teammate, your teammate sacrifices for you, over the course of an 82-game season, you're all going to have plenty to eat.
Yeah.
And that's what we've seen here so far this year. I mean, look at the points they've had. I mean, JT Miller now is up to 103 points on the season, had his 37th goal. Quinn Hughes has 91 points. Pedersen has 89 points. Besser has 40 goals. Filip Hronek has 48 points. Garland hit over 40. Hoaglander, 24 goals. Dakota Joshua, career year, 18 goals, 32 points in 62 games, right? I mean, Pugh Suter contributing. Sam Lafferty hitting a career high in goals. Teddy Bluger having one of the better years he's had. Tyler Myers moving to 24th amongst right-hand defensemen in scoring this year.
Yeah.
There have been 134 right-hand defensemen playing at least one game this year in the NHL. Tyler Myers is 24th in scoring, up to 29 points on the season. And it just shows you that when you all sacrifice for one another and a team starts having success, individual success also happens. And to him, it all comes back to buying into the crest.
Yeah, it comes back to that. You know, they bought into to being a team and not a bunch of individuals. It's something that was desperately needed here in Vancouver. And, You know, there's a lot to celebrate tonight, as Rick Tocchet mentioned. I know some of our texters appreciating that Tock worked Picasso into the interview, into the post game. He mentioned tonight wasn't a Picasso, but they got the job done. They won the Pacific Division. They won their 50th game of the year, and they should be proud of themselves because, yes, it's difficult to accomplish what they have, to beat out the teams that they did through the course of an 82-game season. Edmonton started off slow, some of that because of the Vancouver Canucks. You know, they've been able to beat Vegas this year. They've had some success against their opponents and the biggest teams in the Western Conference. The only team they really haven't beaten at least once is the Colorado Avalanche, as we've talked about in the past. So they've done the things that they talked about, what winning teams do, and it took some time, but really, the script started to change from the moment Rick Tocchet took over from Bruce Boudreau last year.
Yeah.
We immediately saw differences in the way the team played. We immediately saw them cut down on their mistakes. We immediately saw them cut down on the rush chances against and the odd man rush chances against. And they've carried that into this year, built on it as the season's gone along, and here they are winning the Pacific.
Yeah, it's absolutely unreal. And he also worked in a joke, but nobody got it. You know, it was kind of like the media was like Pospisil, not expect, yes. Or Pechel, not expecting. It's yes. Like, is this a no-hitter, no joke? I thought it was a no-joke zone. What's going on?
Yeah.
He said, well, just as we
he was pretty blunt about it. He was like, yeah, that was the plan.
That was the plan.
We gave Demko a lot of work tonight. That was the plan.
Gave up 40 shots, probably a bit more than they wanted, right, in terms of how they want to play. But as we mentioned with Randeep a bit earlier, it's quality scoring chances, 5-on-5. Only five high danger chances for the Vegas Golden Knights.
So most of them in the third.
Yeah, exactly. And the third was a lot looser. But overall, you know, Demko made some great saves, but it wasn't asked to do a lot of high degree of difficulty maneuvering in the goal crease tonight. And I think that's also a big part of them, you know, going away with the victory 4-1. The other thing he mentioned, and perhaps, you know, one of the big questions we're all waiting to find out about, well, two things, actually. We'll get to the other one, too, maybe let it slip there. But one is, who's going to be in the lineup on Thursday in Winnipeg against the Jets? And it sounded like he said it's more important for us to rest guys,
yes,
and not get banged up and take the precautionary reasons. You want to win every single game, but at this point, like, does it matter? Like, to them, resting a few guys is going to be more important than trying to squeeze out the 2 points against the Jets.
He essentially alluded to the idea that they're going to rest some players, maybe look at who's banged up and that sort of thing. But basically just said, have to figure out the best way to handle the final game. So what they're going to talk about tomorrow, what they're going to do here at the rink, and figure out what they do as they get ready to fly out to Winnipeg, is who's going to fly out to Winnipeg. And, you know, they won't know that, essentially, because Dallas is playing tomorrow night. So they won't know if they've clinched first in the Western Conference, but they've done all they can do as far as being first in the Pacific Division. Now, it's about making sure you're healthy for the first game of the postseason, giving those who may need it more than others at least a couple of extra days off, not having to travel. It just makes the most sense. We're going to see pretty much every playoff team do it in these final games. Now that all 16 teams have clinched, there's no reason why the Canucks wouldn't do it.
Especially when you finish the season on the road.
Yeah.
The last home game, sometimes, you know, guys want to play it because it's tonight's atmosphere at the rink, by the way, fantastic. It was a bit of a celebration of the season, especially when the Canucks got a couple of goals. You know?
Anytime there was a half chance, you could just feel like everybody in the building was ready to celebrate.
Yeah, and it was a celebration of a great campaign this tonight, right? And it's a good vibe to be a part of, even on bad seasons for teams. The last home game is like a nice capper, and generally guys want to be a part of that. So for the Canucks, the fact that their last game is on the road makes that decision a lot easier for some of their top guys. But for those wondering how many guys can they rest, there's always a chance that you can, you know, play a game with less than, you know, the 20 required skaters, the 20 required skaters you would have for a game. But chances are the Canucks rest four players.
Yeah.
They have two extra forwards, mm-hmm. two extra defensemen. The Canucks can't call anybody up because they're capped out at this point after sending Shelovs down and activating Thatcher Demko off LTIR. They don't have any cap space.
Yeah.
So they can rest four players, two D-men and two forwards. Now, they could also rest three forwards and one defenseman and then have Friedman play as a seventh defenseman and go 11 forwards. So just for those wondering how many guys can they rest, or saying rest as many guys as possible, there's only four guys you can take out of the lineup for that game on Thursday. So it's not even like you can rest five, six, or seven guys.
It's I think it would be somewhat pointless to speculate, but I would imagine it's probably limited to the top guys.
Yeah.
You know, and does Lindholm need an extra day off? Maybe. Then you go that route. How banged up is Pettersson? Besser's, had to take maintenance days at practice. So there's a few different ways they can go about it. I'm not going to speculate as to who it might be, but I think Rick Tocchet made it pretty clear that he's going to think about who is going to get the maintenance ahead of the final game of the season. The other thing I would point out about what Rick Tocchet mentioned, he was asked about the lineup, and it's pretty obvious at this point, but what we saw tonight, what we saw against Edmonton on Saturday, that's essentially the blueprint for how they want to start their first round of the playoffs.
And we had a lot of people, and even we talked about this too, maybe a week or so ago, that the Lions are still in the blender before Lindholm came back. And it's like, hey, do you want to get to a point where you settle on your lines before the playoffs?
How much longer are they going to be in the chemist lab, trying to figure out what the best lineup is?
And I wondered if a lot of it would come down to Lindholm coming back, and then that would allow them to get back to something more familiar of having Besser with JT again and having Garland and Joshua not playing with JT or Elias Pettersson. And that's exactly what happened in Game 2 of Lindholm's return. And since then, it's looked terrific, the game that they played. And I don't think it shouldn't change. Like, to me, this is the ideal start for Game 1 of the playoffs. Now, how a series goes is going to dictate what adjustments you make or what happens. But this is kind of what I wanted to see in terms of their lineup. And now I think we all feel a lot better about how it looks in terms of those lines being set heading into the postseason.
Yeah, and the way that it's looked with Lindholm, Joshua, and Garland, it gives you another real scoring threat on your third line. And they scored one tonight. They had the empty netter on Saturday. They were the matchup line on Saturday against Leon Draisaitl. No matter who, I shouldn't say no matter who, but if you get LA, there's multiple centers you're going to need to match up against.
Yeah.
So it's going to be beneficial to you to have Pettersson, Miller, Lindholm all on separate lines. Same thing if you go up against Vegas in the first round. The only team would be Nashville, where they've got Ryan O'Reilly and then, the Philip Forsberg line with Gustav Nyquist, Ryan O'Reilly, and Philip Forsberg. And then beyond that, they've got, kind of a bunch of third lines, almost, right? They don't have another real, oh, my God, we've got to worry about those guys, but they have some pesky lines that chip in goals and do what they can. It's the only matchup where you're not as much needing to have the depth at center, but pretty much every other matchup in this Western Conference, you love to have that, and it becomes an advantage the Canucks have over other teams. So that's why I think Rick Tocchet truly really likes having all three of those players on separate lines.
Yeah, and the way Lindholm's going with those guys, as you mentioned, he was happy with it, and something we can talk more about as the show goes on. And he kind of said, I don't know if he let it slip or was just kind of speaking somewhat loosely, the playoffs, whenever they start, Monday, twos, and they kind of caught himself. Didn't say Sunday.
Monday, twos, whatever day it starts.
Yeah. So we're not quite sure exactly when. The hot rumor today kind of making the rounds with the media and people around the team has been Sunday being the start day, but until it gets made official and we know for sure who the Canucks play, that can't yet be determined. So we'll find out.
Sunday is just it's madness.
No, it is madness. You know what? We'll get into that a bit more as the show goes on here. We have a lot of questions and comments, and I see the text messages. This one here says, Justin for Quinn Hughes not winning the team MVP. What the what is that? We can talk more about that, the team awards. That's coming up in a little bit, and I'll get more to more of your text messages. A lot of takes we'll get to, but let's take a phone call here and let's go to Columbia. Yes, Columbia, where we have Jim on the line. Jim, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts after this big Canucks win?
Yeah, well, it's fabulous, and to listen to the whole game here, it's now 12:38 p.m. So I have to keep my voice down, otherwise I'll wake everybody up. But anyway, I had three quick points to make. One was I subscribed to you guys on Sportsnet 650, and I subscribed to a television package too, because I've made the habit of listening to you and watching the game, which I think is terrific. Because your color and play-by-play, I don't think can be beat. I was really ticked off when I noticed in the Edmonton game, Hockey Night in Canada chose to interview two Edmonton players after the Canucks won, which means they had us picked out probably to lose. So they wanted to put all their bets on interviewing after the game. Edmonton. I can't, it's hard to stomach it. Anyway, that was one thing. I think you're doing a terrific job. I'm glad I listened to you each game. The other one is going back to the beginning of the year. I really started to tackle everybody on the web pages on the tank for Bedard business. People that wanted us to finish last, you know, or as far down as we could, so that we got a look what we would we have done if we got Bedard. Would we have done better than we have? I think that's incredible. And I think in this day of salary cap, it's important to get the best out of all your players. Mm-hmm. And to do that, I think we got the ideal coach to do just that.
Fantastic stuff. And what's your last take?
My last name?
No, your third take. You said you had third takes. What's the last one you have here?
Okay. Yes. And in the days of salary cap, I've got to it then. I think we've got the ideal coach, and I think he's probably, I'll go even farther than just saying I'm impressed. I think he's maybe the Pavel Bure of coaches we could have had. I don't know. After the season's all wrapped up, I'd like to hear an evaluation of that. Could we have done any better than him? I'd like to know your thoughts on that.
Yeah, that's great stuff. Hey, Jim, listen, thanks for calling in from Columbia. Do it anytime, and I hope you didn't wake anybody up, but staying up late in Columbia listening to, and thanks for all the kind words. We do appreciate it very much. It's hard to beat Badger Randeep on commentating on play-by-play, so fantastic stuff there.
Molto difficile.
And, yeah, had some choice words for the fans, I guess, who said tank for Bedard. And, you know, you and I talked about this last year, too. We kind of rolled our eyes at the whole debate, like, why aren't the Canucks tanking harder for Bedard? It's like, unless you wanted them to not have Pedersen, Hughes, and Miller on the lineup, there's no real way you could have finished last. And they're like, well, yeah, maybe you could have lost a few games and finished where the Flyers were, for instance. But in terms of actually having a real chance of getting Bedard, that was never a real possibility. No. Like, the only way for them to do so would have been to trade Pedersen and Hughes and Miller. And that's, we always laughed at that notion.
Keep going down the road with Bruce Boudreau when everybody was saying, like, just let the man out of his misery. Let him go already.
Well, that's the thing that always got me, too. It's like people were like, you got to let Bruce Boudreau go, but at the same time, we want you to keep tanking. Well, shouldn't you have the tank commander remain with the team with how things are going? And the final
tank commander.
And the final point being on the talk, it being the Pavel Bure of coaches. Big praise. And hey, listen, it's one of those things where we won't know what Rick Tocchet's true impact is for a few years down the road. But without question, he's been part of the third best regular season in Canucks history.
Yep.
And for that, he might end up winning Jack Adams as well. So he's going down in Canucks history already based on one campaign. Can he be the Bure of Canucks coaches? Well, they've had a few good ones. If he wins the Stanley Cup, well, he'll be even better than what Bure was because nobody's won a cup for the Canucks. So we'll see where that all goes. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. Do you have a take here before we break?
I just wanted to say, you know, the Jack Adams Award, Rick Tocchet even mentioned it today, but the Jack Adams Award, it's pretty much guaranteed to go to Rick Tocchet. I think the Canucks winning the Pacific Division only furthers that notion. And always remember, when it comes to Coach of the Year awards, the coach that brought a team from outside of the playoffs into the playoffs is always going to have a leg up on everybody else. Rick Tocchet has done that more so than any other coach. Like, yeah, you want to talk about Dallas, you want to talk about even the New York Rangers, Peter Laviolette coming in and getting the President's Trophy while they were still a good team last year. All of those things apply. There have been coaches that have done some pretty good jobs around the league. Nobody better than Rick Tocchet.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said, Reach. It's Dan Riccio. I'm Satyar Shaw. Keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox. We'll hit more of your comments on the other side. You can also grab a phone line as the Canucks Central postgame show continues, presented by the number 5 Orange. So the game is over, but is your night really done? The number 5 is open. More next on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. We'll dive deep into all that's happening with the Vancouver Canucks. Listen 12 to 2 p.m. on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Canucks Central postgame show.
Join the discussion on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Rasmus Anderson, right wing to the red line. Anderson dumps it in. Demko out of the goal to handle. Fires it high around the glass near side. Lindholm knocks it down to Teddy Bluger, who's got some room and some time. And passes right side for Myers, shorthanded. In alone, shoots, he scores! A shorthanded goal for the big man. Tyler Myers gets the Canucks on the board. They're up 1-0.
Yeah, that was big. That was a nice shot. Mizey jumping up the play. It was a big one. You know, it got us energized. You know, that tic-tac-toe. The other one, the PD's line, was nice. And then we kind of, you know, I think we were just waiting for the clock to go, and we stopped playing a little bit. But, you know, winning 4-1, locking it down. And, you know, obviously Denver. I thought Denver was excellent tonight.
Saving his best for his last season under contract with the Vancouver Canucks, Tyler Myers, 29 points on the campaign, plus 18. Both are career highs as a Vancouver Canuck. He obviously had a 48-point season the year he won the Calder Trophy when he debuted in the National Hockey League in 2009-2010. But the last time he hit 30 points was 2019 with the Winnipeg Jets. This is the most prolific year he's had as a Canuck so far. And this is the Canuck Central postgame show presented by the number 5 Orange on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Satyar Shah with Dan Riccio. Keep your thoughts coming in to our text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650. And we'll get to some of the team award stuff, because you mentioned people are texting in about whom the team MVP was. But before we do that, what else are the people saying to the Dunbar Lumber text inbox, Dan?
A lot of reaction to our last caller, and he called Rick Tocchet the Beret of coaches. Keith from Haney likes it. It's a good take. Mike in Tawasin says, this is the Pavel Bure of postgame shows.
I'll take that.
We will most definitely take that. And we have Kevin from Coquitlam. Great game, just driving home now. I do think that Miller should have gotten the MVP. He carried the team on his back of all the years when Hughes was playing 100%. Have a good night. So some love for JT Miller being the MVP. I got to be honest. I assumed to the point that I didn't think there was any other real possibility other than Quinn Hughes being the team MVP, that it was just him. And then when we started seeing it on Twitter and everything else, it was like, wow, okay. No, it was JT.
Oh, and Satan and Marple says, the more I think about Hughes not getting the MVP, the more peeved I get. Come on, voters. Did we not watch the same team this year? Do you really not vote for the leading candidate for Norris, who had the best season by a Canuck defenseman by a country mile? Calling out the fans on this one. That is Satan and Marple texting in.
Hughes is going to ask for a trade now. I mean, this is just... These fans don't appreciate me.
And it's like, and people are like, you want him to get Hart Trophy votes? Isn't he even the MVP
of
his own team?
Team MVP.
Like, come on.
His own fans don't even think he's the MVP.
And listen, you always have to take these yes. votes with a grain of salt. And listen, I'm not taking anything away from fans that can jump in and vote or whatever. But hey, I wouldn't get too worked up about these sort of things. But to me, like the spicy argument would be for JT Miller to be the MVP of the team.
Yeah.
Offensively, he's been the most consistent producer start to finish.
103 points.
He's been an absolute monster physically as well for this team. He plays in every situation for them. His plus 32 only trails Quinn Hughes' plus 39 on the team. Well, yeah, Hronek also has plus 33 as well. But amongst forwards, he's been incredible. He up until the fact they got... up until the time they got Lindholm, he was getting all the hard matchups every single night as well.
He's been unbelievable this year. And, you know, it is a fan-voted award. Personally, I would have voted for Quinn Hughes. It is a tight race. Like, JT's importance to the team is immense. And it's been even more pronounced since Elias Pettersson has had a little bit of a dip in form here over the last 4 to 6 weeks, right? So we look at JT Miller, and you have a power forward who's scoring incredible goals. He makes all these great plays on the penalty kill. He's throwing big hits. He puts the team on, like, he's so noticeable. His game is so loud. He's always, like, putting the team on his back and having a big shift and, you know, throwing hits and getting in the mix of physicality of the game. And then you have the fans chanting, and it starts to add up. Like, it's a fan-voted award. Whose name has been chanted more at Rogers Arena than JT Miller this year? The answer is nobody.
No, Connor Garland was making a bit of a late push there. And tonight, when the scrum happened, they were chanting Connor Garland as well. But then the JT Miller chants were louder than any chants tonight when he scored the goal.
Can Dakota Joshua qualify for the Unsung Hero Award if he won it last year? Like, how long does he have to be unsung for?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. And it's like, same thing with Garland. Like, how can he be unsung? The guy's making $5 million almost, too. It's like, he's definitely not unpaid, like, or underpaid. He's definitely getting paid. But
it's like we've traveled back in time to JT Miller's first year when he won the Unsung Hero Award.
Yeah, that is the first year. The last time the Canucks made the playoffs was when JT Miller was the Unsung Hero Award. The guy only had like 27 goals and like, you know, 70 some points, but nonetheless, I get it. It was a year where a lot of love for Pettersson and Quinn Hughes, and of course goaltending with Jacob Markstrom that year. He was sensational for the Canucks. But on the vote on these team awards, they're not actually sanctioned by the team itself.
Right,
they're fan voted, for those wondering, and our texters texting in are calling out the fans for making these votes. I wonder if should they also have like a team vote? You know how the fans vote, like instead of having like, so you can name these awards, like Ted Lindsay, for instance, is voted by the players. Like, have I don't know, like the Don. Oh, I guess they already have the Don Lever Award or something. They just come up with like a random player, like
the Stan Smith Award.
Oh yeah, or like the Gradin Award or something like that. Call it the Gradin Award, and then the players vote for who the MVP is.
Yeah. They could go a lot of different ways with this. This one, Quinn is by far the MVP. Number 1 points as a defenseman. He had more points than Pettersson. I voted JT Miller as MVP. I thought I contributed to minority votes to give him love, though I did think Quinn Hughes would win it. Miller versus Hughes, hard to decide. The thing about Hughes, his game, I mean, look, he's going to win the Norris, right?
Yeah.
First Canuck defenseman in history to win the Norris.
Well, I would say, we keep saying this as if, like, NHL award voting has been an exact science. Listen, I'm not trying to take anything away from our fellow media brethren.
He should win the Norris.
I know one too many Mark Media people that don't watch enough of the league.
Yeah.
That I'm not saying, you know, that's all I'm saying.
That are still going to be like, he's too small, he can't win the Norris. That shouldn't be the case. But, you know, the way Hughes, like, he plays the most minutes, the way he controls the game, the way he controls the pace of the game, and how, like, if Hughes is having an off night, you really notice it in the connectivity of the Canucks game overall. And I think this team can survive an off night of Pettersson, of Miller, more so than they can survive an off night from Quinn Hughes. And that's why I think he's the most valuable.
Yeah, it's a great argument for Quinn Hughes. And honestly, it's a fun year. And I think it's a fun year to have a fun debate about it. And we'll get to more of your text messages on this. Plus, we'll hear from JT Miller himself and Canuck players after a 4-1 victory over the Calgary Flames. The Canucks have claimed a Pacific Division for the first time in franchise history. This is the Canucks on the Post Game Show, presented by the number 5 Orange on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Miss any part of Halford and Brough in the Morning? Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts and don't miss an episode.
Professionals know that you win the game by taking care of the details. Kubota skid steers, excavators, and loaders from Douglas Lake Equipment and Avenue Machinery let you be a champion on the worksite. Now, Douglas Lake Equipment and Avenue Machinery want you to master your own property with the Kubota BX23 subcompact tractor. Dig, mow, and move with the Kubota quality you'd expect. Find Kubota at Douglas Lake Equipment and Avenue Machinery. Together online at DLEAMC.com.
It's sports streaming season. This spring, get set for nonstop action on Sportsnet Plus.
Unbelievable.
Every electrifying game of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Did you see that?
All the knockout moments in UFC. Awe-inspiring action from the NBA playoffs.
Fire!
Plus, the Toronto Blue Jays are back in full swing.
We got it!
Catch all the can't-miss moments that matter most to you. Because when it happens in sports, it happens on Sportsnet Plus. Subscribe at sportsnetplus.ca.
Your business is more than just numbers. It's years of hard work, dreams, and passion. But in the midst of the hustle, have you taken the time to understand its true worth? Crowe's trusted advisors can help. With global expertise across a wide variety of industries, Let Crow uncover the real value of your business. Redefine your company's success. Visit crowmckay.ca to learn more. Crow. Smart decisions, lasting value.
The VinFast VF8 all-electric SUV is here. Lease one today from $499 at 2.99% for 48 months with $3,480 down OAC. See VinFastAuto.ca for terms and conditions and your nearest showroom.
Roamers has landed in Lynn Valley, and they're serving up all your faves, plus some fresh new eats. From legendary burgers to hand-stretched brick oven sourdough pizza, handcrafted cocktails to local beers and sipping tequilas, there's a lot to love at Roamers, now open in Lynn Valley.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Miller, left wing shot, pass looking for a tip from Pettersson, rolls into the far corner, Besser gets it back to Hughes, 8 seconds left, Hughes, right wing for Garland, pass to the back door, Miller can't settle it, it rolls into the corner, but that is going to do it. For the third time in their history, the Vancouver Canucks have won 50 games in a single season, and they win their division for the 11th time, the first time they've ever won the Pacific Division. They ice it tonight on home ice with a big 4-1 win over their rivals from Alberta, the Calgary Flames.
Well, I think it's a step forward. You know, the crest means a lot to me, and you know, we always talk about the emblem on the front more than the back, and I think a lot of guys have bought into that. You know, we try not to preach individualism around here. It's good. You know, it's good for guys that get accolades and 100 points. Some guys 40 goal. That's all great. Don't get me wrong, but. It's all about the crest, and that's what wins in the playoffs. And I think it's so that's what I'm most proud of the guys really buying into this year. And then you got young guys that we've drafted. And then you got the young guys like Hoglander and stuff. You know, they're feeding off this, you know, the culture, the crest, and it just permeates, you know, as a each level, you know. So that's the way I think you build organizations.
Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet, after a 4-1 win over the Flames, the Canucks clinch the Pacific Division. You heard the call coming in from Brendan Batchelor. Historic Canuck season. And, you know, it could go down if the Canucks win on Thursday, as we mentioned with IMAC last time. And unfortunately, IMAC most likely will not make it to join us tonight. Game ran late and all the media responsibilities, so he's going to have a hard time getting to us here before the show runs out this evening. But, you know, we talked about this year and how this Canuck team was able to accomplish as much as they were able to accomplish. And I kind of lost my train of thought. I'm not going to lie. I kind of lost my train of thought for a second. We'll try to come back to it in a moment. But
how much the Canucks accomplished this year?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's been a historic season. Yes, what I was trying to say was we talked about IMAC last game about biggest turnarounds from one year to another. And 70, or actually with Don Taylor the other day, about how in 74-75, the Canucks had a 27-point increase from where they were the year before, which was the biggest jump from missing the playoffs 4 years in a row to making the playoffs finally. If they end up winning tomorrow, it'll be a 28-point jump for this team, which will be the biggest improvement from one year to another in Canucks history, which is absolutely sensational when you look at where they were last year and where they find themselves. And, you know, it completely exceeded any expectations we had. Like, you know, I think you had the most optimistic outlook of the Canucks before the season reach, and you had the Canucks finishing third in the Pacific Division.
Yeah. And people thought I was absolutely bonkers, and I was the biggest homer, a bigger homer than Jack Edwards is for the Boston Bruins.
Well, I don't know about that, but okay. Is that even possible?
Probably not.
Yeah.
But the point of it all is, like, the turnaround is unbelievable, and it started with Rick Tocchet when he took over for Bruce Boudreau, but they brought in a lot of new players. Right, you think about the offseason, and there's free agency. They bring in Cole. He has a big impact on defense. Bluger's had a big impact. Suter has played really well. Carson Soucy, when he's played, has been one of their sturdiest defensemen on the back end. And then you get to training camp. They're like, you know what? We're not done. We want to do some more. They get Casey DeSmith. They get Sam Lafferty. They did all these little things to make sure that the top players were finally insulated properly.
Right.
With competent players that understood how to play winning hockey. And yeah, when you look at Teddy Bluger's hockey reference page, do the numbers jump off the page? Absolutely not. But he's been the most credible fourth line center this team has had basically since Jay Beagle, but he's not being paid the same way that Jay Beagle was. And that's a big difference for how they've gone about insulating the core of the roster compared to what was happening prior to their arrival here in Vancouver. And I'm talking about Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin. And the other part that I think is really important to how they've set the team up for success, they continued to make tweaks in season. You know, Zadorov became available. They were the most aggressive in going out and acquiring him. And really, you look at when Zadorov was acquired and how their results turned, because it really filled out their defense. And at the time, Carson Soucy got hurt too. I mean, it made a big difference. So their active front office played a huge role in filling out the roster and making moves at the right time that really helped this team have the chance to have the success that it did in the season. And the players did their part by buying into the culture set by Rick Tocchet.
Well, and if you want to even take it back farther, they brought in Casey DeSmith right before training camp began, making the move with Tanner Pearson, solidifying their backup goaltending position, and even a Sam Lafferty trade.
Yeah.
That's a trade they make right before the season begins. If you try to make that trade at the deadline, you're probably paying more than a fifth-round pick than what you gave up. Maybe, I don't know about a third or anything, but you're probably paying at least one round up.
Oh, and they took a lot of heat for, like, why are they giving up a fifth-round pick for Sam Lafferty? What did you really have to pay more than everybody else for Sam Lafferty? And, I mean, yeah, I know he's cooled off in the second half of the year, but still 13 goals. That's a career high for Sam Lafferty. Pretty good for a guy that's played mostly as a fourth-line forward this year.
And that's the type of player you look to pick up ahead of the deadline. Has some size, is good on the forecheck, some speed, some toughness. That's that type of player that in the playoffs can be a real benefit to you. Now, could the Canucks still use some size and grit on their roster? I mean, you'd love to see it. Could they use another scorer up front? Yeah, you'd love to see it. But most teams in the NHL this year, and that's why it's an open year going into the playoffs, are imperfect in many ways, right? Yeah. But in terms of giving management its dues, Dean Abbotsford says Canucks management have a high attention to detail with their roster. It's impressive. And they do. I mean, they've been really meticulous, and Tocchet spoke about that in the clip you heard about the development process, the young guys that are coming in that they've drafted that are showing progress, what Hoglander is becoming. And a lot of this is happening under the new umbrella of management and how they're developing players, the amount of resources they have spent in Abbotsford developing players. And just look at Hoglander from where he went last year to where he is this year and what he went through in Abbotsford and through this campaign to become the player he is today. And a lot of that can be attributed, obviously, to him and his hard work and dedication, but also to the environment that this management team has created that is allowing players to be the best versions of themselves. And, you know, you mentioned Bluger before. He just matched a career high in points this year, 28.
Well, even Vasily Podkolzin, who I know is still with a bagel next to his name in the goal column. But you watch Podkolzin play when he's out there on the ice. He makes a lot of smart plays. And some of the things that Tocchet has mentioned so much about body position, winning the battles along the walls, getting to your spots, getting to the right spots and winning those battles. Like, all those little things that this organization preaches ad nauseum, you see Vasily Podkolzin do those things. And it's why he's won the 12th forward job going into the playoffs. Like, for as much as I appreciate Phil DiGiuseppe and what he's brought to the team and how he was a fixture with JT Miller and Brock Besser when Rick Tocchet first came in and did brilliantly with that spot, I'm smart enough to also know Podkolzin's doing some of the things that Phil DiGiuseppe was doing, but also has a higher level, right? And so, yes, the goals haven't come yet for him, but it's a sign of how a lot of the players in this organization have taken to heart what the teachings have been, how the Sedins are working with these guys on body position, when to make the right plays, when to do this, when to do that, those types of little things, situational development for each player that ties into how they want to play and their structure of how they play as a team and their staples and all those cliches. But, like, you see Vasily Podkolzin put those into action. And I think if he keeps playing this way, you know, eventually you'll start to see some offense come out of him. Is it ever going to be worthy of the 10th overall pick that he was taken with a couple of years ago? Maybe not, but he's developed here into a credible fourth line forward, and I actually really like what him and Lafferty do together as, you know, a winger tandem, because they both have speed and they both have size. They can actually bring something that other players on this Canucks roster don't really do.
Yeah, and I think for the most part, he's been physical. I did get a tweet from Paul Berry, who kind of mentioned, do the Canucks have a better, tougher option in Abbotsford than Podkolzin? I don't think they do. I think in terms of their best options up front, they're all playing here right now.
Yeah.
You know, and I think because of the size and speed combo you mentioned, Podkolzin is still your best bet to provide that more physical impact. And could he do more at times? Sure. I mean, every player can. But outside of the scoring, I think he has done that well. And he's also made a lot of smart puck management decisions.
Yes.
And I think when you look at late game situations as well, there was a few shifts against Edmonton, and we mentioned even games against Vegas, where his line has been spending some time in their own zone. And then when he gets a chance to get to a loose puck and get it out, I mean, he's fighting like heck to get there, right? He's battling to get the puck out, and then he'll fight through contact through the neutral zone and ensure he gets the puck in deep, and then he'll go off for a change. And sometimes those things people don't look at enough or take much into consideration, but all that means is, like, his line is surviving, and if he gets caught out against good players, he can still find ways to get the puck out and get the puck deep. And yeah, it's not sexy. He's not going to go out there and score, and you want to see him provide a bit more. But when you're looking at playoff hockey and being stuck out there in tough shifts, can he help you survive? And I think he's shown he can do that. And that's no small thing when you get to the postseason.
Well, and when it comes to the postseason, he might play, 6 to 8 minutes realistically in playoff games here, because minutes are going to tick up a little bit for JT Miller. Minutes are going to tick up a little bit for Elias Pettersson. And who's that going to come out of? That's going to come out of guys like Lafferty and Podkolzin more than anybody else. But there's a lot to like in Podkolzin's game, and I think that goes and ties into some of the stuff that Rick Tocchet mentioned earlier in his news conference.
Absolutely. We'll hit some more text here before we get to player audio. Cam from Victoria. Hronek with the coldest chirp of the season. 2 days until vacation. Checkmate. That's Cam from Victoria texting in. And yeah, it was we haven't talked about the scrum too much, but the scrum that happened, Nils Höglander getting into
Nils.
It. He gets everybody going, you know, Höglander, and then Garland jumps in, 5'7" or whatever he is, pulling Klepka down he's like 6'7". It was really funny.
6'8",
just pulls him down. And then you the Sportsnet cameras caught Filip Hronek giving a few chirps to... You have holidays in 2 days. It's a fantastic chirp. It's the type of chirp you would expect NHL players to make when they're going to the playoffs and an opponent isn't.
Yeah. You have holidays in 2 days. What are you talking about? Get out of here.
Yeah,
it's fantastic. So good.
Now, we did joke about it a bit with Randeep too, right? I mean, hey, this is the first time Hronek is going to be in the playoffs as an NHL player.
Yeah, and his teammates back in Detroit, they will not be going to the playoffs.
You have holidays in 2 days.
They have holidays starting right now, actually, for the Detroit Red Wings. It's it's been a remarkable season for Filip Hronek, and I'm curious, you know, as to what happens here with him in the playoffs and how him and Hughes fare together. Can they find that top form that they had for so much of this year? Because I think that's maybe one of the things that hasn't really clicked as well lately, but we'll see how it goes come playoff time. It's an elite chirp, and that whole scrum all starts because Nils Höglander just gets into it with Braden Paschal, and then he goes for the cross check. Paschal does the big snapback on the head, tries to make a meal of it, to the point where they actually call a major on Nils Höglander in the play. Eventually it gets overturned, but I loved that scrum. The only thing I hated about the scrum was, like, do we really need Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson to be in a scrum right now, two games away from the start of the postseason for the Vancouver Canucks? That's the last thing they probably need. And Quinn still got a little bit into it. Pettersson was very much like, this is not ideal for me. I don't like this right now, being in the middle of this scrum. But you know what? He participated a little bit.
Yeah, he was definitely a participant. He was a little bit of participation. It was a lot of fun to see, right? And Phil says, it's not possible to be a bigger homer than Jack Edwards.
Okay.
I agree. He said, come on, Sat. That was reach. That was
well,
me.
Tell that to the people who were mad at me for calling the Canucks to be third in the Pacific Division. And I undersold them in the end.
I know. Oh, I mean, and speaking of that, the other day, people were texting in with us and saying, I mean, a while back, about how the Canucks are going to miss the playoffs. And, I mean, I'm sorry, they're not going to win the division anymore. They're cooked in the first round. I don't know how you guys think they even have a chance to win the division. It's over.
Even yesterday, people were, like, freaking out at us that we said Nashville is the most probable opponent for the Vancouver Canucks. And then L.A. goes and loses to Minnesota and makes it even more probable that the Canucks play the Nashville Predators in the first round.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Yes. I got this text from Kevin Woodley. He says he was in the room with the Flames. And Braden Pekel had a chirp about Hoglander saying it's a good thing he's 5'3", or he would have hit me in the head. As in, you know, 5'3".
Oh, great chirp, yeah. Braden.
So that was a good one.
I still don't know what Braden Pashel was so mad about. It was like Nils Hoglander just went in for a forecheck. Like, I can't believe somebody threw a hit in this hockey game that means absolutely nothing to us.
It was pretty funny. They got him mad. I mean, hey, it's
Braden Pashel's like, you're going to ruin my golf career. I'm supposed to be on. I got a tee time Friday morning.
I can't swing with a bad back. I'm not Tiger Woods. I can't make it work.
My fight for Cabo leaves on Friday morning. What are you doing?
Okay, we're getting people asking us, too, what are their playoff scenarios? So the Canucks can still win the Western Conference if they beat the Dallas Stars. And if they do that, the Canucks would face either L.A. or Vegas. So the Canucks can still face one of L.A., Vegas, or Nashville.
Yes.
Nashville is still their most likely opponent because there's a couple of ways that can happen. You know, Dallas just getting a point tomorrow, then it's over. Or the Canucks, you know, losing, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
That would also do it. But outside of that, Canucks winning and or losing, they would not finish first.
Canucks need to get a win over the Winnipeg Jets to possibly catch the Dallas Stars. But if Dallas gets a point tomorrow against the St. Louis Blues, then that is all done and dusted.
Yes, Vegas and Dallas can still Vegas and LA can still finish eighth or third.
So
in their division.
If Dallas gets any kind of a point tomorrow night, it is official the Canucks will play the Nashville Predators in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. So the Canucks may not have to do anything in order for that to happen. Now, is Dallas going to start everybody? How is St. Louis going to play that game? Who knows? It's game 82 of the season for both of them. It's a crapshoot. It's essentially a preseason game. The reality is the least likely opponent right now for the Canucks is the Vegas Golden Knights. And the reason that is because Vegas has Anaheim on the final day of the season, and that means they're most likely to win that game. As long as Vegas wins that game, they finish third in the Pacific Division, and there is no way that the Pacific Division winner can play against the third-placed team in the Pacific Division. So it is the far likeliest scenario that the Canucks end up with the Vegas Golden Knights. Most likely scenario is for the Canucks to play the Nashville Predators. And then in the middle is the LA Kings because LA, you know, even if they win their final game, it's not up to them where they finish now because Vegas can finish ahead of them, and they don't hold the tiebreaker on the Nashville Predators.
Absolutely. You know what? We lied. Or I lied.
You lied.
I lied.
I always had an inkling that iMac would show up.
I said we're probably not getting iMac. We're going to play player audio. So I teased JT Miller audio. That's not happening because the man we call the triple threat just stepped into the studio. You hear him on radio. You read him on digital. You watch him on TV. He's iMac.
I guess I'm the one who lied because I did tell you I probably. Oh,
well, there we go.
Sorry. Sorry, Jimi Hendrix. Carry on. All right. That's enough. You know, the Canucks win a division once in every 11 years, whether they need it or not. So the least I could do is hustle over here, which I did. They've taken my breath away. That and the run across from the other side of the arena has taken my breath away. But, you know, a great night. Most of the guys taking a lot of satisfaction at the same time downplaying it.
Yeah.
And, you know, Connor Garland said, it'll be forgotten in game one of the playoffs, but it won't be. I think we're all going to place it in the proper perspective as of game one of the playoffs, but it's not forgotten. This has been a remarkable season. There's going to be a banner hanging from Rogers Arena next fall.
Yeah.
Because of this season, regardless of what's going to happen in the playoffs. And maybe this is a different Canucks team, right?
Yeah.
Given especially the last 2 months in some ways, although the team was, you know, just above 500, in some ways to me, it almost defines how different this team is than so many that we've seen in the past, because there was plenty of opportunity to fail. There was plenty of circumstances that went against them. And even this race to the finish line in the Pacific Division, honestly, if you're like us and you've been here a long time in Vancouver,
yeah.
especially if you've grown up here and remember watching them as a kid, you always expected doom. You always expected the worst. And this race, you know, with Edmonton closing and the Canucks scuffling, it kind of would have been a very Canucky thing had Vancouver not won the division. I mean, 2003, that was classic Canucks, right? The we choked, basically, speech by Marcus Nelson when they lost the division on the last day of the season. Well, they didn't lose the division. And they won it in a convincing way, going to Edmonton and beating Connor McDavid's team without Connor McDavid. So,
yeah.
But it's still a team that I think, if you took a poll, is probably going to be the most favored to win the Stanley Cup. They won that game on the road. Then they come home and they take care of business tonight against Calgary. And we'll see what next week brings. But it certainly has been a redefining season for the organization.
It has. But also, you know, you refer to the West Coast Express here and Marcus Naslund, the wee choke that's going to go down in Canucks lore forever, right? But I think foundationally, this team is, and I'm not just saying different, like, is different because even through some of their struggles, for the most part, they played the right way. They played Canucks hockey the right way for, I'd say, what, 80% of the season? No one's going to do it for 100%, right? You want to get to close to 90. Were the Canucks there? I mean, you can argue that, especially towards the, but even after the All-Star break, games they lost, they weren't giving up a ton. Like, they've always had this foundation of good, clean hockey for the most part. They know what to do. They have a real identity of how they play. So that level of, now it's justified that if you weren't concerned that it wasn't going to fall apart. But I think that's one thing that this team has that we haven't really seen in a ton of Canuck teams through their history. They've been, you know, either not high scoring teams that have some issues with goaltending or some issues defensively. Of course, we know the 2011, you know, that team was close to being a perfect hockey team. And I'm not saying these guys are perfect, but they're foundationally a really strong hockey team. They've proven that this year.
Yeah. Well, they were one of the best highest scoring teams in the NHL through the first two thirds of the season. And they were one of the very best teams defensively in the NHL in the final third of the season when the offense dried up. They've shown what they're capable of at each end of the ice. So imagine if they actually get those two things working in harmony, in unison at the same time. They would be a very tough out. And I think, you know, what you're talking about, Sat, is grit. And it's not something that we would have associated with this team before the season. There's a lot of things that happened this year that we wouldn't have thought possible before this year. But it's not just that they have these really talented core players who, for the most part, have driven them. But down the stretch here, I mean, Quinn Hughes is magnificent every night. And, you know, Thatcher Demko in goal tonight, he picks up where he left off, looks like a Vezina Trophy finalist. But a lot of these games down the stretch, it's not just the Stars carrying the other, you know, 12 or 14 guys. It is very much, look at the depth scoring in Edmonton that won them the game that really won them the division. And I just think there's a lot of substance to this team that did not exist previously. You know, it was... Yeah, they had some great young players. But in hindsight, that was really empty calories.
Yeah.
You know, Pettersson getting 100 points. JT had the great year the year before. Quinn has broken records the last two seasons, breaks them again this year. But there's a lot more substance to them and this group this year than what there was in the past. And, you know, does that mean that they're going to have playoff success? No, of course not. And no matter who you play in it, not just the Canucks series, but almost any of the eight first-round series, no matter who you play, it's going to be a toss-up. Like, people will be able to make the argument about who should win and how big is an upset, really, if the team that opens at home doesn't win. But they have components that they haven't had before in terms of their character and their structure. And then, of course, there is the talent. And undeniably, they have some high-end talent where they have enough of that. We'll see whether they have enough of the other stuff and whether they can produce it under pressure. That's really the biggest question. There's no doubt that this team has shown through these 81 games that when it's on its game, it can beat anybody. Doesn't mean they're necessarily going to, but they can play with anybody. They don't need to fear anybody when they're on top of their game. But now they have to do it in the seven-game series. And if they get through that, then the next series is even tougher, seven games, and so on. And that's really the question. So little playoff experience in the group. Everybody's saying, acknowledging that until you're there, you don't know what it's like. I mean, that's now the challenge for this group. It's not about, you know, are they not enough this or too much of that, they're going to lose, or about, you know, are they tough enough or anything like that. It's all about now, do they have the mental capacity to, under extreme pressure, unlike anything that most of them have seen in hockey, can they execute and play the way they need to play in late April and hopefully into May the way they've played for most of this season?
Well, and you think about Demko, 2 years ago when they finished up that first 56 or whatever games it was with Bruce Boudreau, and you know they came just short of making the playoffs, and Jim Rutherford starts his end of season news conference being like, we need to be a team that doesn't rely on our goalie.
Yes.
and then the next year it starts with Demko coming slow out of the gate, then he gets hurt, and they never recover from that. And here you have this chance to potentially lose out on the division. They go 7-5-2 without Demko. It's not an amazing record, but it's enough to get the job done and close out the division title.
Yeah, but last year, even had Demko not been hurt, there was no way that they were trying to play was going to have any kind of lasting success.
And the benefit of this is, like, now they've created a team that doesn't rely on their goaltender to stand on his head every single night for 58 minutes of the night or whatever it's going to take. They have Demko to bail them out when they have their odd breakdowns.
Which is what happened tonight. They're probably, you know, as Tocchet made the point, you know, they just won the Pacific Division.
Yeah.
So let's enjoy that. I'm sure they had too many of those breakdowns for his liking. They didn't want Thatcher Demko to have to face 40 shots, especially since this last period, since the offense disappeared and the team started scuffling 2 months ago. You know, they've been giving up, what, like 24, 25 shots a game. So they've been a very good defensive team. So you're right, they don't need the goalie to necessarily steal them games, although at some point you do. Like, if you're going to have at some point you need your goalie to be better than the other team when your skaters aren't as good as you would like them.
It's kind of like, well, some nights you're going to need your fourth line to win you a game or come up with a big goal. Some nights you're going to need your goalie to come up and steal you a game. But, you know, you just can't have that be the only way you win hockey games.
Right, and I think that's something that this team has shown as well, that they have multiple ways.
Yeah.
To win games now. I mean, what has Elias Pettersson, I know we've talked a lot about him, but what, you know, what has he contributed in the last month? He's had some really good games and contributed some goals and points, but he hasn't been driving this team. He hasn't been carrying guys on his back. JT Miller, was less enthusiastic about his scoring than everyone else was this morning when he was asked about it, because he knows that he can play better. Quinn Hughes, as I said, he's magnificent every night. Yes. So he's just a unicorn. I don't really know what to make of it because I've never seen a guy play this way in Vancouver. And the only guy I've seen comparable in the last 25 years is playing in Colorado, Cale Makar. Maybe Scott Niedermayer. But Niedermayer didn't have the offensive thrust that Quinn Hughes does. This is my long-winded way of just saying it's not Demko. It's not about him. It's not only about Miller. They don't maybe need Besser to score every second game. And they've shown that they can be successful even if Petey's not playing at an elite standard. They need all these guys. They need everybody to raise their game. But there's enough there. We've seen it, you know, with the Garlands and the Joshua and this fairly outside of Vancouver, anonymous but massive defense behind the first pairing. We've seen that there's enough there now that you can find different ways to win games. It's not only going to be on, as it was, say, in the bubble, which we all recognize was nothing like a real playoff tournament. But back then, it was still all about these top guys driving the Canucks, and if you know they went basically as far as Pettersson, Hughes, Miller, and then Markstrom and Demko at the end took them. I think this team has much more going for it now than just that core.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's why they're going to the postseason as division champions. Only one game remaining, and that is in Winnipeg on Thursday. iMac, you'll be there, so we'll chat with you from Winnipeg,
and
most
I'll
likely.
Definitely have time for it.
Oh, yeah, earlier
with
start.
2 hour time change.
Oh, we're good. And hey, listen, we look
I might
forward.
Just do the whole show.
Hey, listen,
say 2 hours.
You're welcome to join
I'll
us.
I'll take calls.
Yes, you know what? Yeah. iMac from Winnipeg.
That would be great.
That would be fantastic.
People would love that.
I think they would be all about it. But
everyone but me.
Yes. We'll get into all your contributions in the regular season tomorrow. We always appreciate your time and the fact you ran over here to make some time for us this evening. And I look forward to reading your latest on sportsnet.ca. But it's not like we're saying goodbye on Thursday anyways, because we have playoff games to talk about as well.
Playoffs? So
it's happening.
Yes.
Just like Jim Mora. Yes. But it's actually happening.
Surprised, but in a different way.
Yes, in a good way. Yes. Exactly. I'm Mac. Thanks again for your time. Fantastic as always. Make sure to read his latest on sportsnet.ca. He's Dan Riccio. I'm Satyar Shah. We're back on Canucks Central tomorrow. Thanks to Eddie back at the station, Lena here at the rink, and all of you for listening, participating, being part of the Canucks Central postgame show. We appreciate every single one of you. We'll be back on Canucks Central tomorrow, but also the next postgame show is coming up on Thursday. This has been the Canucks Central postgame show presented by the number 5 Orange on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.